Hello again, this is Charlie Belfontaine, and you're listening to the Home Buyers Hour on WCPT AM 820. And we got just the three of us today, no real estate agent here. So we're going to turn this one into more of educational on the shows. And, you know, I value Joey, I value Patrick quite a bit, and these are two leaders in the real estate profession. And as arrogant as it sounds, so am I. All right, so I think now it's a good time to talk about the different professions that we have and how to go ahead and vet an attorney, how to go ahead and vet a mortgage broker and a home inspector. And we might even beat on the real estate agents so much. Why not, right? But first, I want to go ahead and introduce Joey and Patrick. Patrick, please go ahead and give us your contact info.
Well, until I can start my new career as a professional influencer, I'm still doing real estate law. I handle residential real estate transactions. If you're buying or selling your home, I'm the guy you hire to make sure things go smoothly. You can find me on social media, because it's 2024. That's how we do it. And my Instagram handle, is it a handle? I don't know. On Instagram, find me Loftus_law. If you want to find me on TikTok, which seems to be where people are finding me these days, until it gets banned or whatever, I don't know. Find me at Loftus Law. And if you see me on Telegram, it's not me. It is an imposter. Do not let them sell you crypto.
Seriously, that's happening?
I just found out yesterday that is happening. So,
wow. Yeah. I just asked my wife this morning about, I'm seeing a whole bunch of this. We're really going to miss some heart. Apparently, that's a scam, you know, or somebody's, and Devin, our producer, is marking up. You haven't seen it at all?
I haven't seen it.
You're not, you know, my age.
My algorithm is different.
We're on Facebook.
It's a Facebook thing. Do you use Facebook, Patrick?
I have a presence there only because my Instagram reels get reposted to Facebook. I try to stay as far away from that place as possible.
That's where all the nice people go. Joey, can you give us your contact info?
Well, I guess I could. So my name is Joey Matthews, NMLS 1330694. You can call or text me at 630-235-2405. Find me on social media as at the VA Loan Nerd, at my website at thevaloannerd.com. Or listen to me here at the Home Buyers Hour every Saturday morning or on the podcast world.
Someone give me a towel. I need to, you know.
I'm in love.
You know.
So what is going on before we get into how to find the good people? You know, what's going on in the market with this, Joey?
That's a fantastic question. These Fed rate cuts, I mean, I'm literally watching Money Movers right now. And Fed rate cuts, they just keep getting pushed back because there's too many signs that inflation is more sticky than originally anticipated. We have actually the Fed's favorite gauge of, well, recently the favorite gauge of inflation being released on a Friday morning, April 26th at 7:30 Central Time. That is PCE numbers. That is how much money you people are spending. Stop spending money and inflation will go away, I promise.
Oh my God, we were at Oak Brook Mall on Sunday. And the place was an absolute madhouse. I'm like, first of all, really? I'm like, people still go to malls? And you know, if you think brick and mortar retail is dying, I mean, just go to one of these places. I mean, yeah, sure, a lot of malls are closing, but the ones that are left, boy, there were a lot of people. So yeah, Joey, to your point, they're out there buying stuff at Zara. They're at Lululemon buying all that.
I'm sorry,
stuff.
What? Is that how it's pronounced?
No, it's not.
Okay, thank God. I felt so dumb for the last hour of my life.
I don't even know what they are.
Lululemon.
You know, Lululemon.
Your wife probably has some.
Yeah, those tidy things that they were?
Yeah.
All right, so
yeah.
I don't know anything about that stuff. I'm kind of naive in that. So
love it.
I'm gonna get Charlie some.
Charlie leggings. Secretly wearing two pairs right now, but you can't see that because it's radio.
Yeah.
I got called out yesterday wearing a Lululemon shirt on a video conference call. True story.
Look, they make comfy stuff, but it's outrageously priced. But I will say, so one of my friends is I forget what they call it. They're like a brand ambassador or something. And he calls me up one day and he's like, "Hey, I'm over at the Lululemon store in Bucktown. If you can get over here in the next hour, I can give you $200 to spend here, you know, on the house." I was just like, I'm on my way. So I would, you know, the shorts are real comfy, you know, but I wouldn't wear a Lululemon shirt because, yeah, it's easier to get called out with a top.
You do get called out. You do, in fact, get called out.
You know they sell shorts at Costco, right? And they're like $19.95.
I mean, I'll have to find out what Costco is.
I guess.
Boy.
I mean, we're. I mean, look.
We got to get back to real estate here.
Where are the markets? No. They're talking about moving the federal rate cuts back. I just heard it on a Squawk Box just now from there's people saying maybe closer to November they'll start doing rate cuts. So, I mean, they just keep kicking the can down the road.
But the whole purpose for rate cuts is to starve off a recession. Is that right? I mean, rate cuts are going to spark the economy. But if the economy is still going strong, we don't want to spark it. Am I right in that?
You don't want to add gas to the fire, as a fireman once told me.
Yeah. You know, so that's fine. I mean, I don't know. To me, I always look at this stuff as like the Titanic. You know, it just doesn't turn that fast. And you got to, you know, do little nudges to get to where you're going. Unless there's a big ass iceberg in there.
He said big iceberg.
Big iceberg.
Unless there's a big iceberg in the way, then you do want to turn really quickly. So
I did get this entire outfit at Nordstrom Rack at their Clear the Rack event a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, in case anyone is under the impression that I am out there just, you know, chucking money around, I'm more of a, they said Charles Comiskey threw nickels around like they were manhole covers. That's more where I'm at. And as I explained to Charlie, it's not because I'm frugal, it's because I'm broke. And, you know, it's not that I want to be this way, I just have to, and, you know, that's how it is.
Baby, I was born this way. Way to go, lady.
Well, I want to, let's start getting into the subject where we're going to talk about what makes you unique. And I want to ask you two first to talk about what you know about home inspectors. And I'm not saying the unique stuff. It's more of what's expected. When you say that, you know, what's a good home inspector, what words would you tell your clients that they should be looking for?
The first thing I would say is, you know, the price should be secondary, right? And everyone's got a budget, but, you know, that's not the metric that you want to use. That's certainly not your top metric. So I would say first, you know, of course, you want to know how much that inspector is going to cost ultimately, but make sure that that's not necessarily the first question you're asking. But I'd want to know, how much are you going to explain things to me? As far as I don't necessarily want a binary kind of thing when it comes to identifying a problem in a home. I need to know where it falls on the spectrum of, you know, how serious is this issue to my safety and my family's safety, and how much is it likely to cost, you know? Or, you know, hey, I'm pointing this out because I feel like, you know, you need to get a complete picture of the home that you're going to buy, but, you know, we're going to explain things in a way that is going to be able to you know, give an accurate impression of things. And I know, Charlie, you go through each of your inspector's inspection reports after the fact with your clients. And, you know, to me, you know, that's the thing I'm looking for, whether you're going to be doing exactly that or, you know, during the inspection. You know, am I able to ask you questions during the inspection? That's another good one.
I think, are you allowed to be at the inspection? There's a lot of home inspectors that don't let that happen.
If the home inspector will not allow you to be present, that don't hire him, just full stop, okay? I can't think of a scenario where I would say to somebody, don't go to your inspection. I know sometimes it's impractical. People are out of state and, you know, whatever. The time and the distance don't afford for it. But if someone is either telling you, specifically, don't be at the inspection, or it doesn't matter whether you are at the inspection, I'm already suspicious of that inspector.
How about you, Joey?
What do I know about home inspectors?
Yeah, well, what would you tell somebody, what is a good home inspector, what they should look out for?
Oh, okay, man, good question. Yeah, sure. God. Well, no, I'm thinking, because obviously I've worked with Charlie before, right? So, like, it's like I'm used to the diamond, and, like, that's just, yeah. I expect what Charlie provides. Like, so it's tough because I can't tell you of necessarily a bad experience with a home inspector. That's my problem here, right?
No, no.
I've heard stories of home inspectors being at a property for like half an hour, as much time as an appraiser might be there, and just be like, "Ah, you're good." You know, like that's you would not trust that guy. I would go get another home inspection done after that one.
Yeah, right? How many inspections do you schedule in a day? There's another one, I think, just to kind of, you know, pile on top of what Joey just mentioned. You know, are you banging these out? Are you banging out, you know, $500-$300 inspections a day? In which case, no, thank you. Or, you know, yeah. Are you doing one, maybe two, so that you can actually spend the necessary time to not only go through the home with the client and then spend quality time with the inspection report in preparation, because if you're just plugging a bunch of things into some software and it's going to bang out a 95 page report, and you know, you feel all great about that 95 page report because there's 95 pages, that's just more work for me, man.
And that shouldn't be, you know, it's not the intent that a home inspector, if we do our job right, we're not supposed to be making more work, because, and this was something that I recognized for a long time, and I just recognized it not all that long ago, I'm embarrassed to say, but you don't realize that just by identifying what the problem is, you're actually creating a whole bunch of other problems for other professionals in our profession.
It's true.
You know, and the real thing is, well, how much is it going to cost? And a lot of home inspectors don't want to put price tags on things. But there's good and bad when it comes to that. I mean, first of all, our true, true enemy is ignorance. All right. And we don't want to admit that we're ignorant on a subject matter. And I think that's in society, not just as far as home inspectors go. So if you don't know how much something's going to cost, then yeah, you're right. You shouldn't be quoting it. All right. But there's other tools out there, and you can find other people to start getting some price ranges for people and cost estimating software. And really, that makes a difference. You know, because when we do the follow-up interviews with our clients, the biggest thing I get from them is, well, how much is it going to cost and who's going to pay? All right. So, you know, for me, I could help you with the how much it's going to cost. We can run that through the cost estimating software. But then they go, well, I'm going to call my attorney as soon as I hang up with you and ask them what I should be negotiating for. And I'm like, okay, do that. You know, that's always good. But you really, they may not have the tools required to answer that question either, because it, you know, they need to know how much leverage, how much power you have to negotiate. And if they don't have that knowledge, and Patrick, I don't know if you always have that knowledge, you know, how do you tell somebody what to negotiate for? You know, there is no principle anymore. It all depends on how the market is.
I mean, the market is one aspect of it. You need to be identifying, you know, really what is the context of the transaction. So, for example, if you're buying a condo in the Gold Coast, you probably have a lot more, you know, market leverage, we'll call it, than if you are buying, a house in Lincoln Square, for example. You know, because those are two very different markets, and you know, right now, the Gold Coast is not favored. You know, River North, South Loop. You know, if you're gonna spend the kind of money that it's generally gonna cost to live in one of these neighborhoods, a lot of people are opting out because the one of the big advantages is the proximity to your office in the Loop, and as people continue to be either full remote or hybrid, they don't find the value there. You know, and eventually you will see the pendulum swing on that. You know, it just, things evolve over time. But you know, how many offers did you beat out? All right, that's definitely a question.
Yeah.
You know, if it's
how
as
many other
is,
people are even bidding?
Well, if it's as is, you know, that's gonna paint. In part, it's going to paint a different picture in terms of that transaction. If the thing that was discovered is, you know, something that if we back out, the seller is going to probably have to address anyway. You know, if there's an active leak, even if it's as is, if your toilet's leaking and I've got a stain on the ceiling below it, I mean, come on, you know, repair that. Repair for yourself, you know, if not for the buyer. But you know, there's so many different moving parts there. I hate to say, you know, with the market is the only thing that matters. I mean, not really. I mean, the other part of it is that you'll have sellers that already have moved some pieces around on the chessboard where, you know, they've got a closing on the house that they're buying. So losing a buyer at that point, it becomes a lot more costly. And so you may be willing to give up more just to get the result you're looking for. So, you know, I could sit here. How much time we got left?
I don't want to dwell on everything, different
scenarios as far as how to, you know, establish what leverage we have and what we may or may not want to ask for.
Well, I'm going to suggest that anybody who's listening, get your pen and paper out. These are going to be some of the good things to watch out for and listen for when you're interviewing and choosing home inspectors. All right. First things first, you want to find out how many home inspections. Patrick mentioned this beforehand. The more home inspections that people do in a day, the less time they're going to have for you and your property on inspection day. So, you know, for us, we're typically on site about 3 hours. All right. We average somewhere around 70 issues that we document in a home inspection report. Now, not all of those are serious. Most of them are very minor. But the number is there. And knowing what the average, and it's a really a good question to ask, what is the average amount of issues that you find during a home inspection? Then it gives you an idea, where does your house fall into the so-called average of other homes that are out there on the market? In other words, if we documented 70 items, well, then this is a normal house. If we documented 100 items, we got more than usual problems. And of course, 40, 50 items, then this has very few things going wrong with it, you know, but they could still be expensive items too. So 3 hours on site, we do not write the reports on site. That's another good question to ask, you know, because that eats up your time. You know, the home inspector has to focus on the building, so doing the inspection. If they value you as a client, they have to focus on you and your needs and make sure that you understand what it is that they're finding. And then number three, they have to focus on writing the home inspection report. Those three things need full attention to get done. And we just can't do all three, we being me and the inspectors under our name, we can't do all three at the same time. So we decided to leave out the report writing. So we're going to focus on the house. We're going to focus on the client. We're still going to be there 3 hours. We're going to drive back home or to the office, and we're going to write the report. That takes about an hour or two to get all that stuff done. So if you do the math, you know, an hour driving here, an hour driving back home, 3 hours on site, 2 hours writing the report, there's pretty much an 8-hour day. Now, if you're going to try and do two of those in a day, well, then you're going to be cutting out that communication or that writing, or you got to drive really fast or get a Star Trek Enterprise out here so you could be beamed to one location or another. The next question should be, what kind of equipment? The state of Illinois does not mandate any home inspector use any equipment whatsoever. They make it very clear that it's a visual inspection only. But they also do not limit what you bring to a site. So, you know, what was that?
Sorry, I have a story about Charlie doing that.
And and sometimes, you know, me personally, I want to be as definitive in our company on the findings that we have, and I want to give as much proof as I can because I know I'm going to be challenged and somebody's going to say, oh, that's worse, or oh, it's not as bad as he's making it out to seem. So I want to be able to be as definitive as I can. So some of the common tools that home inspectors are now bringing, you know, and some companies charge extra to use these tools, which I don't believe that's a good marketing tool either. You know, it just seems like nickels and dimes that you add on there. But thermal imagers, that's kind of a key one. What that does is allow you to see missing insulation, water leaks, and you can scan a big area. But not always when something shows up cold is it water, so that's why they want to have a moisture meter with them as well, so that they can verify or disprove, you know, either prove or disprove that it's actually water that's coming in there. You know, so then The other tools, like we use a combustion analyzer. You know, we have black lights that are in there. If we can't walk a roof, we're going to be having drones to go ahead and get up on top of these roofs. And then also for the ancillary equipments, you know, do they do pool, radon? Soil testing, sewer is a big one now, you know. And if they don't do it, as long as they subcontract it out and you can get that done without making a bunch of phone calls, that helps out quite a bit. Another big thing to check on people is the reviews. And that one, and I cannot encourage enough. But don't just look and see how many they got and what their star rating is. Dig a little bit deeper, all right? And you want to mostly find the one-star reviews. Hmm. Nobody is going to make everybody happy, all right? You're going to have an angry client. But what we're really looking for is the response from the company. And how did you handle this, all right? Did you just start calling them names? I've actually seen that before. You know, home inspector, or client says the home inspector did a garbage job, and the home inspector comes back, goes, now you know why your family hates you. It's like, what is wrong with you? You know, we are professionals. We are also human beings. Human beings make mistakes. I don't judge anybody by the mistakes they make. I judge them how they handle those mistakes. So taking care of our clients should always be the number one priority, but respecting the other professionals in the real estate action or transaction should also be there.
Yeah, right. I like to find like the common threads. You know, I think what you said about looking for the one star, definitely, because you know, you want to see if there's something that's coming up repeatedly, but yeah. Both good and bad, right? So, and this goes for anytime you're evaluating reviews. I mean, there's usually, and it doesn't, you don't have to take tons and tons of time, but usually you can figure out, you know, the handful of issues that people are tending to have with a particular product or service. And so, you know, to your point, those are super useful.
Thank you. I couldn't ask, you know, I couldn't add better comments to that at all. The other thing is going to be, you know, what do they do to, you know, in case they miss something? What's their backup plan? All right. Is there a guarantee? Most home inspectors in your agreements are going to just refund your money if they miss something during a home inspection. And we are protected in the state of Illinois because of that. And the reason the judges have protected the home inspectors is mostly because of that freedom of choice thing. You have the choice to bring out a roofer or an HVAC contractor, plumber, and so forth, but instead you choose to take one individual who's not going to be educated as well in all those different fields. You're going to get it for a reduced money, so hence they get to reduce their liability in case they don't find something that comes in there.
Yeah, and it makes practical sense, to be honest.
It would, first of all,
I mean, you know, nobody's perfect. And, you know, to hold someone liable for something that, you know, there's every chance that they didn't miss it, but it was just something there that you couldn't observe with your own two eyes. But if, I mean, look, a house is a very complex thing. There is no perfect house. Even the best home builder building the best house, there's going to be at least a handful of things that may, you know, you may not be able to perceive it until you've lived there for a little while. And, you know, that's just the practical nature of a home. And if you were to hold every inspector liable for everything under the sun that they could have missed, and I know there are some states that do, you know, hold them more responsible, so to speak, you know, you'd have far fewer people going into the profession if not for, you know, the simple fact that they wouldn't be able to afford the insurance.
Wisconsin is one of those states. They don't allow you to limit your liability, and then you also have to be liable for 2 years, all right, that somebody could find out there. And there's attorneys that are out there literally, you know, like ambulance chasing, you know, to try and find these sort of issues, because if somebody has a good errors and omissions policy, they know they could get a decent paycheck coming out of that. And another thing, too, is finding out, you know, the experience means a lot. The list size means a lot. But also, you know, going into detail so that you as the home buyer understand what it is that you're buying. You know, it always, what I think is easy and what I have knowledge on isn't always the same for everybody else. You know, in other words, well, I can do brain surgery now. I watched all the episodes of Grey's Anatomy, all right, and I noticed started with the 10 blade, but they still won't let me do that, all right? And yeah, I get it. There's a lot of intelligent people out there that are intelligent in their ways, but when it comes to ground fault circuit interrupters, when it comes to smoke alarms or whatever, they don't know what the rules are and why these things need to be there.
You know, I let you off the hook for saying ambulance chaser. I prefer to call them consumer advocates, but you okay. Know, to each their own. You use slurs in my presence. Unbelievable.
I'm so sorry. I did not mean that negative comment towards you in any which way.
I got to stick up for my brethren, even though I don't like most of them.
Gotcha. But going back to, you know, you mentioned earlier about the severity of an issue and how much it's going to cost. There's also one other, I don't know what the right word I'm looking for is, one other item that we're trying to figure out that we put in there, and that is, what is the probability that this is going to go bad or create a problem? All right. So, you know, we use those three. You know, what is the severity that it's going to create a problem? How much is it going to cost? And what's going to happen if the problem comes up? How bad can it hurt somebody? So, you know, like, let's take these GFIs, for example. You know, if all planets are in alignment and this thing isn't working right, it can actually kill somebody. That's severe, all right? But then if I take the other two, you know, purchasing a new GFI and replacing it so it works okay, well, that's $25 and 15 minutes of a laborer's time. And I think that's fairly inexpensive to go ahead and get this fixed so that it doesn't kill somebody. And then the first one, which is the probability, I mean, you need a lot of planets and alignments to come in there. We have to have a wire come loose. It has to touch the case of something. That case has to be energized. Me as a human has to touch that and another grounded source in order to get that. And then also the GFI has to have failed. All right. And then, yeah, that can actually kill somebody. So because of those, I don't really see GFIs as a what we call a red item. You know, we push it down to our color coding as a very minor issue, because the chances of something going wrong are low, the cost to fix it is low, but the damage that it causes is high. So don't get me wrong, I want it fixed, but I don't really see this like, oh my God, this is a problem.
Yeah, and you know, just to expand on that a little bit, with GFCI in particular, the frequency that I find GFCI on inspection reports.
Just about everyone, I'm sure.
Right. So all of us probably are living in a world where we are not as GFCI protected as we could be.
We don't check them.
And, you know, I can't think of a single person I know that has been electrocuted to death as a result. So
me neither. But it has
happened.
That's
how low a probability it is.
And that's my point, you know, but that doesn't mean we should ignore it. All right, it should still be fixed. Don't get me wrong. It's just that, you know, is this something that you're going to walk away from a house? And I don't think that's a wise decision, because then you're going to find another house that has the same thing. So, and it, because it's so
over and over again.
Exactly. And then you're going to end up being $750,000 in debt to the home inspector, you know, which we really don't want to do that. So, you know what? I went way too long on talking about our business, and I'm glad I got that out there. I would like to get some contact information, Patrick, from you, please.
Yeah, come follow me on Instagram. You can follow me there. I'm at Loftus_law. I really need to contact whoever has Loftus Law and see if I can buy it off of them, because this underscore is killing me. I am on TikTok at Loftus Law, and I am not on Telegram. If someone from Telegram who is using my name, my good name, to sell you crypto, that's not me. And that's probably not crypto.
And Joey, give us your contact info, please.
Why, I sure will, because I'm back, because the power's back. But anyway, Joey Matthews, the VA loan nerd. You can call or text me at 630-235-2405. You can find me at thevaloannerd.com or across all the social media as at the VA loan nerd.
It's hot.
Now, and let's go ahead and get Joey for a little bit. You know, as far as me as a home buyer, things that I would expect in a loan officer would be, how easy is it for me to get my information that you need from me to you? You know, do they have a simple uploading software? And then also their communication is like one of the most important things. If this is somebody like, yeah, and they're shooing me away, I don't want to do business with them at all. All right. I need somebody who's going to at least make me feel important, and I want to work with that person. Patrick?
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, when I'm dealing with mortgage brokers, and I do on a regular basis, the communication is really the where it makes or breaks things. And I know there's a lot that happens with mortgage broker and the client that happens before I'm involved and really outside of the context of my involvement in the transaction. But when I need to get a hold of you, I need to be able to get a hold of you, because it's usually on a mortgage contingency deadline day, or it's during negotiations, and you know, we need to know if we can fit, you know, such and such a credit in, or you know, just any number of things that can come up that if I can kind of clock it, then I can have a conversation with the mortgage broker about, hey, I noticed this, it's been a problem on other files that I've handled. Can you let me know if this is going to be a problem? Any kind of fatal problems that we can discover, the sooner the better. And so I really need to, that time that we can save by having those conversations as early as possible. You know, it's ultimately that communication. And I know, Joey, you've talked in over and over again about, how you are communicating not only with the attorneys, the client, certainly the real estate broker, the other real estate broker, right? Maybe the other lawyer.
But how does that come into you, Joey? I mean, what is it, like some of the things that you've heard happen to other clients that would be a negative for a mortgage broker? Or what questions do they ask you that are like, thank you for asking me that question?
So my thing, whenever I talk to a new client, is like, if you're talking to me, it can start becoming a lot like drinking from a fire hose. And I tell them right off the bat, I'm like, hey, so I have a lot of stuff in my brain. All right. I know you have questions. Let's get those off the start with those, obviously, because that's what's most important. And as you're answering those questions, new questions can arise that you cannot answer. Right. So but also just generally not lying. If you don't know something, just say you don't know it. Like that's the easiest thing in the world to do. Don't pretend you know something you don't know, because once you state something, that becomes fact in their opinion or in their mind. Okay. And if facts suddenly change, then they realize like, okay, that's not great that you told me something that wasn't true. I will not lie about your situation. I'm literally about to tell somebody who doesn't qualify for a house this morning and give them a path to home ownership. No, but it's not, because you have to let them understand that it's not forever. It is a not right now situation. And I can see that he has a path in 6 months. If he will listen to me, he'll be able to buy in 6 months. I guarantee it.
Nice.
No doubt about it. All right. But giving them the path, don't just give people bad news. Like there's no such thing as bad news unless you let it be bad news.
There it is. See, that's like the fireman talking, Joey, and you. Well, no, recognizing the problem is step one. Finding all the possible solutions and choosing the best one, that's steps two and three, and then follow-up comes into play. But that's all common problem solving, and that's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, and it's just there's so many people. Like this job is so freaking easy. It is so easy. God, it is though, right? Like everything about my job can be found literally online. Like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA, USDA. They post all their underwriting guidelines right on the internet. All right. Some lenders will have overlays that can be a little bit more stringent, but the basis of my job is literally found online. If you can do that, you can do this job. But no one does it. No one just says, hey, let me get you that answer real quick. They would rather just word vomit, and then they can't get it back in.
I actually, when I do those follow-up interviews, it's fun because I'm sharing my screen. And I'm going to look things up. And I'm going to, here it is. Here's the link to this. So, and I'm going to put that in the chat so that they can read it as well. You're absolutely right. The stuff is there. It goes back to being lazy or not.
Exact same thing. Whenever I tell someone what they don't want to hear about something, I will show them exactly where it's found, the part that they don't want to hear, because it's, again, it's easy to find. So I'll send the snapshot, whatever, from whatever handbook that I am looking at for this situation to show them, like, no, this is like a real thing. This is life. Let's get through it together, you know? So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, you can just tell when people are BSing you. Like, if you're getting that feeling you're being BS, it's because you're being BS.
Yeah, not always. There's some people that are really good at it, though.
Well, perhaps, but, you know, I would say, you know, one red flag would be if someone sounds like they're telling you everything you want to hear, I would certainly start to question things.
But that always bothers me. I know I've sent a couple past clients, you know, to Joey that ended up getting the deals canceled on them. I mean, what a horrible thing to do. You tell somebody that the stuff that they want to hear, and everything's moving forward. Guess what? There's going to be a traffic cop there that's going to stop something if it can't happen. So why not go ahead and tell them before they even get in the car and drive away that they're too drunk to drive, you know, and they need to sober up and come in there? Why let all the bad stuff happen if we could stop it in the beginning?
Because they're not utilizing any strategy. They're just hoping. Or
they're literally praying. They're like, God, I hope I'm wrong. Just whatever. Yeah.
Or they just don't know. You know.
But that's why we get paid.
Well, I'm learning. I'm always learning stuff. You know, there are things. You know, the problem is every time I learn something new, it makes me adjust my process. It takes so much longer to get through stuff, man. Yeah. You know, 10 years ago when I knew 10 years less of information, man, I could get so much more work done. And you know, it's. For my clients, it's for the best, right? And you know, I do enjoy having the kind of expertise that I have, which comes from doing nothing but handling real estate transactions. I don't have to split any parts. I don't have to share any parts of my brain with any other practice areas. I can just focus strictly on, you know, the things that are important for real estate.
No, without a doubt. I mean, Joey, I want to get back to you a little bit. Do you share with your clients that you're going to be communicating with all the other players in the real estate transaction?
Absolutely. And so the other thing, too, like, and this is so geographical, maybe, like, I call, I text, I email, like, listen, I'm trying to get your offers accepted. There are certain pockets in this country where people just don't pick up the phone, and it drives me nuts. And they'll get offers, and then you never even get a reply. You never get a counter. You never get anything. Like,
really?
So, oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm literally thinking of Arkansas right now because I have a few in Arkansas, and I couldn't pay someone to pick up the phone in Arkansas. It's crazy. But yeah, in Chicagoland, it's great. Like, because I actually had a contract accepted. It just closed yesterday because the realtor on it had worked with me before. The listing agent had worked with me before. They had other offers, but they're like, hey, if this guy's on this thing, it's going to close, I promise you. And that day, she sent me a VA buyer, too. So, Courtney, that's you if you're listening. But thank you for the trust.
Yeah, Chicago is unique in that there are people like me involved in most of the residential real estate transactions.
That's not common across the United States.
I don't know another place where where this is the process, where they have, you know, where it's more or less a given that people are going to be using lawyers to buy or sell.
But what's so unique about us? Why are you needed?
Well, why am I needed? Because, look, you're dealing with contracts, right? As soon as you think contract, you should start to think about, you know, having a lawyer to evaluate it and making sure that everything is on the up and up with it, right?
I don't do that when I buy a car, and I'm more afraid of those people than I am Joey's laughing at me. And I'm not trying to be hard. I want to get a hard question on you, but I'm not trying to be against hiring an attorney. It's like, why? Why is it with real estate in our area that it's, you know, I mean, usually it has to do with a problem that has happened, and this is a solution. Have people really gotten harmed buying homes?
I mean, you're giggling at me. Of course they have. I mean, look, if you don't know, if look, I'll
give, and I don't know.
Well, sure. So Yes, the answer is yes. People do get harmed buying houses, and you've seen it, I'm sure. Where I mean, somebody's GFI pops on their water heater, and someone's trying to sell them a water heater for $7,000, which is an example that you gave to us.
$5,500. Let's not exaggerate. For a water heater?
When you told that story, it was before all of this inflation. So I'm guessing that water heater would go for $7,000 these days. I mean, why not? You know, if you're going to charge $5,500, why not charge $7,000? I mean, you're just making up numbers at that point.
Yeah.
You know, a water heater, unless you are buying like something really fancy or something, you know, exotic, it just shouldn't cost that much. So how can they be harmed? I mean, first of all, you're going to be making an earnest money deposit, okay? And if you don't understand that there are certain deadlines, that if you miss them, your earnest money is now at stake, and you didn't understand because you didn't understand the contract. I mean, you know, what's a mortgage contingency? I mean, you know, most people would not know the answer to that question.
Do you find yourself explaining that to every single client or a vast majority, or do you have videos? How do you get that information to them?
Yeah, the majority, sure. I mean, of course, with a cash transaction, a mortgage contingency wouldn't be something that we would have to talk about because it's cash. There's not a mortgage involved. And, you know, we wouldn't have a Joey to, you know, to harass every time we need an answer to some simple question. But yeah, I mean, more or less, those are the kinds of things, you know, when I write my attorney review letter. Okay, so we use form contracts, and so, you know, that is a way of mitigating the possibility of ending up with a contract that really has some harmful provisions in it. The one we typically use, the multi-board 7.0, it's meant to be you know, kind of equal, unequal,
really?
Sizes. It's got more protections for buyers and sellers because buyers need more protections than sellers need.
I would have said the other way around. I would have said that contract was more geared towards the seller's protection as opposed to the buyer's protection. But that's really interesting.
Well, sure. I mean, look, there are way more ways that a buyer can cancel the contract without putting their earnest money at risk than for the seller. Okay, so for example, if it's condo or if it's any kind of you know, association situation, we're gonna you know, there's a contingency for us to review on the buyer side the association documents and financials. How do you evaluate those? You
know, is that time limited as well?
It is. In the multi-board 7.0, it's 5 business days from when those documents are tendered to you.
Oh, okay. That I didn't know. So it's not from when the agreement's signed. It's 5 days from when you get the documents.
Right, because it's not, you know, to our detriment, we wait way too long in these transactions to get, more often than not, to get the association documents and financials to the buyer. And if we were to base that on acceptance, so what it says is you're supposed to, as a seller, place the order within, I think, 10 business days of acceptance. It says place the order rather than tender the documents, because you're not guaranteed to be able to get them from the association or property manager within any sort of time frame. I mean, these days it's a lot quicker. A lot of times they're just online, and, you know, with email, it's a lot easier than in the old days. And I think they modified the Condominium Property Act to make it the deadline quicker for an association to tender these documents.
And you're talking about the Illinois law.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Illinois Condominium Property Act. I think it's quicker than 30 days, but it used to be 30 days, right? And that's because you would have to actually, like, run a copy of, you know, I think the last one I reviewed, there were 340 pages of these documents. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot of it's skimming, right? Like, I don't necessarily need to know the laundry room rules and regulations, right? So I can skim that one, but pets or rental restrictions or, you know, things like that. Certainly financials, special assessments, that was one that I was spending some time on yesterday trying to, you know, wrap my arms around whether or not there was a special assessment, who's paying for it, this, you know, and it, not for nothing, there was two special assessments I was looking at. I think they were ultimately going to be about 15K worth of special assessments. I'm ballparking that one. I don't have the exact figure in my head. But that's not nothing.
Money.
That's not nothing. And, you know, trying to figure out, you know, was it turns out one of them was probably paid and the seller didn't know that. And so they actually, to their detriment, disclosed two special assessments pending when it's most likely just one, which is a much it's way different when there's one than two, especially when the one that was paid was the far more expensive one.
Does that have to get over to Joey as well for the mortgage things?
Yeah, Joey, you guys have to determine that the condominium is warrantable, I believe is what they is how they describe
that. That is so, and something that I would suggest whenever you're talking to a lender on these condo things, you can ask them if they have submitted them through the Fannie Mae PERS system and seen if they're already approved. That way you can limit the docs that you actually need to send to Fannie Mae and go straight to insurance review. The last like four condos I've done the last couple of weeks have all been on the Fannie Mae approved list. So all I do is I collect the certificate of insurance and their HO6 policy, their condo policy, submit it for insurance review. As long as we have proper coverage, we're good to go on the condo. So then everything else belongs to you. So the special assessments being paid out, that it goes straight to you guys as the attorneys to figure out how the seller is going to pay that at closing. That's what should happen. The seller is going to pay that at closing.
Yeah, the vast majority of times they do, because even if the seller wants to negotiate that, you know, what's the buyer's recourse if that's a hard no for them? They would just walk away. And now what the contract says is, you know, it's on you, or, you know, now you don't have a contract. Now that's special. I mean, as a seller, that special is yours until you sell it. And whether or not you pay it off at closing, you know, that you're the owner, you know, and so, you know, again, that's the reason that the contract has more ways out for a buyer than for a seller, is that the seller already has the thing. Right? Yep. That gives
them the power for it because they have it.
Well, they are
nine tenths.
They're not assuming any risk by owning it because they already have assumed that risk. And for the buyer, they're coming at it cold for the most part. You know, unless it's like a tenant buying from their landlord or something. You know, they're coming at it from a completely cold perspective. They know next to nothing about the piece of property they're trying to buy. And that's why, you know, there's this due diligence period where you are, you know, given the opportunity to discover as much as you can about it. You have the inspection. If you need to bring in other contractors or other professionals to look at things, if you know, see something in the condominium documents that is a no-go, and that's, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again, we need to normalize condominium documents being available for buyers to review before they even submit offers, because, you know, to the extent that they can understand what's in there, or they can get their lawyer to look at it and say, you know, hey, this looks okay, or hey, there's a pet restriction you need to watch out for. I mean, as often as not, even if it's in the listing that there's a, you know, pet restriction or a rental restriction, a lot of times that they just get it wrong. And, you know, these non-negotiables just have to get out there on the table so that the parties can realize it's not a good fit and go find, you know, something else to buy and someone else to sell the property to.
Fix the problem before it's a problem.
Well, yeah. And as often as not, it doesn't work out. And I feel like, you know, there's only a few real estate agents that we've talked to here that have expressed that they feel a level of comfort, they're comfortable enough to review and understand what's in condominium documents. I think for the most part, they go, that's lawyer work. And they're told one of the first things you're told as a real estate broker is that you're not allowed to do lawyer work. And so if they view that as lawyer work, they go, I'm not allowed to do that.
That's interesting. Joe, you get a lot of that too, where you're not allowed to do something? That doesn't really fall in your lap, does it?
No, not really. I'm not going to go into any sort of negotiations with anyone. Obviously, that's realtor work. I'm not going to do any, I'm not going to send any demand letters. That's attorney work. I'm going to stay in my lane. If it's numbers, I'm going to play with numbers.
I love it when the real estate agent that I don't know and I have no relationship with, they tell me what I'm allowed to do and not do. And
or when an owner tells you you're not allowed to do a combustion test in a furnace?
Well, there is, an owner can say that. You know, it's their house. And, yeah, that I will respect, Joey, because it's still their home. And you are a king in your own castle, and I completely respect that. Yeah, if somebody doesn't even want me in there, they don't have to let me in there.
When John Wayne Gacy says, don't go in the crawl space, just don't go in the crawl space.
Okay? I won't. You know, that's a guarantee. And so
that's not a joke for the youngins. But actually, there was a Netflix documentary, maybe even more than one recently. So the young folks may actually know who Gacy is. Terrifying human being.
I think they tore his house down. They did. I want to say it was in Des Plaines. Oh,
yeah, it was in Des Plaines. They tore it down because it's just, yeah. Who in their right mind would live in that house?
If the price is right, nope. You never know.
Oh, nah. Man.
Nah.
Unbelievable.
Hard pass?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just going back to what we were saying, and we are running out of time right now. We only got about 2 minutes left. But, you know, doing due diligence in advance, I hope every single home buyer takes this stuff pretty seriously. I mean, the way I look at it, buying a home is one of our basic needs, home, our food, water, shelter. I get all that. But I've seen families get harmed considerably by buying houses that have so many issues in them.
Could ruin your life.
It could ruin for generations, could ruin your children's lives, you know, if some of these things get so bad. Or if you have to walk away from it, I've seen people do that as well. And I've seen people get sick, mm-hmm. you know, because of some of this stuff here. We just had one house where the ejector pit is open in a condo that's below grade, and they walk in there and they're smelling sewer smells throughout everything. And I'm like, okay, and I don't want to be rude, but that's unhealthy. Mm. You will get sick. And I'm talking about long-term issues where it comes with it. So anyway, I could jump up on my soapbox. I really believe in everything that we do, and I value both of you as well.
The things we've seen.
Exactly. You know, I want to throw a little plug out there for my company. It's Chicagoland Home Inspectors. Our phone number is 312-544-9180. And if you're interested in joining the home inspection community, that's Home Inspection University of Illinois, HIUIL.com. And please, if you press number 3 on that phone number, you'll get to me, and then I can go ahead and get you going on the right track. Patrick, please.
Yeah, we didn't talk about lawyers that much today.
Sorry.
You know, used horrible slurs like ambulance chaser. But let me just, you know, briefly say, if you're anywhere in and around a real estate transaction and you feel like someone's rushing you to make a decision and it's not right, that's a big red flag. So whether you're looking to hire a lawyer and you feel like that person, I mean, if that person seems like they're rushing to get you off the phone, big red flag, man. That's not a person that is going to be very communicative. And that's no bueno, okay? So anyways, I don't ever do that. I don't think I do, which is why you should find me on social media. Find me on Instagram, Loftus_Law. Find me on TikTok. I like to stir the pot over there. Find me at Loftus Law.
And Joey, your contact information, please.
Yes, sir. You can find me at thevaloannerd.com across all the social medias as at thevaloannerd. You can call or text me anytime. 630-235-2405.
You got Patrick over here dancing. Well, thank you, Devin Tingle, for making everything sound so good, especially Joey's voice. And this is Charlie. And I am out. So sorry, people.